You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Mireya Salares Casas. Mireya, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks to you. Hello.
Mireya, let's talk about what you're working on now. Now, I mean, to begin with, I know you're just outside of Barcelona. You've just moved there. Maybe we should speak a little bit about that. As an artist, a writer, why move outside of Barcelona? You were talking a little bit about the gentrification.
Yeah, actually, that's the sad part of Barcelona, that normally not many people visiting Barcelona might know. But people who are living and working here we are struggling a lot in order to get an apartment to live. Rent has no limit for increasing, and every time that your contract is finishing, the amount of money that they can ask for the new contract is unbelievable, because there is no control at all. There is a lot of gentrification. I mean, there is a big industry of tourism that is affecting a lot to people who live here. And the ones who are really profiting from tourists visiting the city are not many. And so it's really hard, actually. I did a project some years ago about it, and it's the only artwork I've never sold it. And it's in the Contemporary Art Museum of Barcelona collection. And it was about that. So it's something that it has been, well, present in my concerns since many years.
Mm. Well, yeah, I hope the space you're in now is bigger than. I would imagine you have more space than outside, or
Yeah, I'm getting better. Yeah, better place, 5 minutes from a beach, industrial beach, not very glam beach, but very nice, local people with family. Yes, I just moved it. I just moved here and I like it. I can have also my artwork in the apartment because it's a little bit bigger. And the place is an old factory that the family decided to renovate it and transform it into apartments. And actually, it's quite well done. So, yeah, it seems nice.
Very good. So let's talk about what you're working on now. What are you working on in all areas? If it's more than one thing, let me know. But what are you working on at the moment?
Well, I just right now I'm participating in an exhibition in the art center in Barcelona. It's the CCCB, it's a cool center of contemporary cultural of Barcelona. I'm sorry, I'm translating directly from Catalan.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's quite well known. It's not a museum, and it's not specialized only in visual arts. Also, I don't know, it's the place where Judith Butler, when she's coming to Barcelona, comes to speak, for example, or, I don't know, Rosie Braidotti, or whoever intellectual who's coming to Barcelona to talk, really everybody. It's the place where they go and they are visiting. And they do also exhibitions and also film festivals and many other things. And it's very, very close. Actually, it's almost touching. They are sharing the same square with the Contemporary Art Museum of Barcelona. It's in the very center of the city. And in 2 weeks, the art center is opening an exhibition about feminisms that the project is two exhibitions at the same time. That's why they are sharing a title, which is Feminism, with an exclamation mark at the end. And what the first one is an exhibition from the 70s, like the first feminists in the arts field. And basically it's an exhibition that it's coming from Austria, and it's from, like, the curator is a woman, I'm sorry, I cannot remember her name right now, who is curating the exhibition, and is an exhibition that it has been touring for more than 10 years already. So the CCCD decided to have it, but at the same time, a curator who is a professor at the university in Barcelona, also in France, in Paris, she decided to do an exhibition of other artists or feminist artists who are working more, you know, now that maybe they were not even born during the 70s, that are, let's say, the other exhibition is, you know, collecting the artwork basically made at the 70s. So the second one where I'm participating, it's more made through different artists, not local artists as me, I mean other people who maybe are from abroad, but that they are more or less working and living in Barcelona. And and I'm presenting a project that actually I developed more than 10 years ago in Mexico about female orgasms, that it's called The Little Death. And it's the project that has been more exhibited abroad, not that international. If I'm a little bit known, would be more for this project than others that I've done. And now I'm, you know, I don't know, this morning I was in the radio, a radio in Barcelona, talking about this project, and the woman was telling me, I cannot believe a project like that. It has been, you know, it's already 10 years old, and we haven't seen it really here in Barcelona. And it's, well, welcome to the woman artist world. You have to wait.
So tell me a little bit about that show. Let's hear about that. And to begin with, The Little Death, where does that come from? That sounds like a euphemism or a phrase for orgasm. Is it?
Is it? It is. Actually, it comes from the French expression la petite mort. That is an expression, I don't know where, I mean, Sade and all these people use that, no? They use it. It's an expression to refer orgasm, not only female orgasms, orgasms, no? If I'm having a little death, it means that I'm dying a little bit. It means that I'm having an orgasm. And I remember when I heard, the first time that I heard it, I thought, that's why it was so difficult for me to have an orgasm, because I was so scared. I am so scared to die that's why I was, you know, having trouble to have orgasms. And of course, that's the reason why I did a project about orgasms, because I had problems with my own orgasms. No, that's the thing. That's the reason, because sometimes people have asked me, and how come he had this idea to work about orgasms? And it's, no, darling, you don't have an idea about that. You have a need. Your body is asking for that. And then if you're an artist, you develop a project about it, no?
So tell me what you'll be showing there, and then let's talk about that project and how it evolved. Yeah, what will you be showing there and at this point?
Yeah, it's funny because you ask what you are working right now, and I'm talking about something that it's 10 years old. But that's who it is, no? And that's why I think
absolutely.
It's interesting.
Absolutely. Well, things
you know?
Take time to evolve, especially, you know, our sexuality and orgasms and our whole sexual life is an evolution, I think, for everybody. So, but as an artist, of course, that makes sense. So, yeah, tell me what you'll be showing there that reflects this.
The project has let's say, different pieces. The most important one is a documentary film based on interviews. I would rather use the term conversations more than interviews, because I never considered that I was interviewing. It was more sharing my needs, my curiosity with another woman in Mexico, let's call. So it's about 30 very different women. I mean, they are nuns, guerrilleras, prostitutes, intellect, rich, poor, young, old. Very different kind of woman of different parts of Mexico, from the border in the north, in Ciudad Juárez, Chihuahua, El Paso, you know, all these areas. And then we are talking with indigenous people in the south, in Chiapas, for example. Well, I was moving around all Mexico. I developed the project during almost 4 years. That's something that I normally do, really developing long-term projects. That's something very important. So there is a film that is 5 hours long, who is not exhibited in the exhibition center. It will be screened once in the auditorium. But in the exhibition, you can see a thread or like a kind of trailer of 20 minutes. And then there is also a neon light, a sign of a neon pink, like a super bright pink neon light that says Las Muertes Chiquitas. Las Muertes Chiquitas in Mexican language, it means the little death. And it's an expression to refer to orgasm in Mexico, too. Huh? And so with this neon light, I was traveling in all the places that I was visiting women who accepted to be interviewed, talking about their own orgasms and the relations that they have had with pleasure and sexuality during all her life. And I was arriving 1 year later or months later with the neon light, and I was doing a photo, a portrait of the woman, the neon light, and the place where we had the conversation. Normally, we had the conversation in a kind of an intimate place, and what we were doing is going out to this place, for example, going out to the window and putting the neon light on the facade, or going out to the street, or the backyard where the neighbors are also sharing. There was a movement of going out, you know, making it public, let's call it like that, and putting the neon light the whole night there, taking the portrait. So it was half of photo production series, and at the same time, a kind of site-specific, ephemeral intervention, something like that. No, so we can see the photos, the neon light. There are three photos that are audio photos, meaning you have a headphone side of the photo, and then you hear my voice explaining what happened when we were doing the photo and when we left the neon light there. So there were many things happening. I don't know, for example, in Ciudad Juárez, we were in the desert because I interview a woman who has been fighting against a feminicide. How do you say it? Yeah, feminicidio in English? No, the genocide of the woman. And so her sister was kidnapped, raped, and killed, as many other women in Ciudad Juárez. And since then, she has been fighting for, you know, justice. And she decided to do the interview inside of the car and bringing the car in a desert in a specific place where many bodies of women were found years ago. So what I did is 1 year later, we came back there with the neon light and we take the photo and we took the photo. Of course, all the, you know, lights, generator for putting the lights for the neon light, etc., made it more visible that, and somebody came and kind of was threatening us by saying, "What are you doing here? What's going on?" And we were, of course, saying we are talking about orgasms, female orgasms, and the light means orgasm, nothing, you know. And the guy was kind of saying, if you are talking about woman murder here, you are going to be in trouble, blah, blah, blah. No, so, for example, this audio that in certain photos is close to the, let's call it, there is a piece called that we could describe as an audio photo. It's explaining things like that. Or there is another one that explains why a woman who decided to do the interview talking about their own orgasms in her mother place asked me, "Please, Mireia, I want the neon light inside of my mother house the whole night," a kind of catharsis or something like that. So right. This is, and there is also a documentation table. There is a book of the project where I invite other women and philosophers and thinkers writing about it, and it's also there. It's a little bit,
So this, and of course, this project can continue. It sounds ongoing, even in this installation. This is a new iteration of it, how you're putting it together. But let me ask you this: as you said, you began this out of your own interest and in your own sense of your sexuality. And this been 10 years since then? So how have you evolved, or how has it, if I can ask that, supported your own sexuality and pleasure over that time? Do you feel you've learned from this? You now have a different physical experience because of all of these interviews and learning?
Yes, of course. Actually, I remember, because for me it was very, very important. Let's do a decolonial statement, right? Very important. This is not a project or a movie about a white heterosexual, that is, you know, a white woman educated in equalness, she's sure about her heterosexuality, that has orgasms every time that she wants, that she can detect any kind of violence crossing her body, pleasure and freedom of desire and pleasure and orgasm, and knows exactly what to do. And she's so free and so good with no economical problems, nothing, that she decided to go to Mexico to give voice to the poor Mexican submissive woman. No, if this project is something, it's not that. It's the opposite to that. It's a woman, a European white woman, that has many problems with her sexuality, that she hasn't talked that much about it, that she, you know, that finally she needs to go away, far away from her place, and talking with a stranger, that would be a methodology. Sometimes talking, you talk with a stranger, a foreigner, with more freedom than with your own mother or your best friend, okay? And so, of course, I've learned a lot. I remember I started this project and I couldn't have an orgasm by myself. I have had an orgasm with a guy. My first orgasm was when I was 27 years old, and I had sexual relationships since I had 17. So for and during this, well, talking and doing this project, I've done many things, let's say unfinished business, asking my mother and if she ever had an orgasm, for example, because I'm 46 years old. The women of my generation, the majority, they have no idea if the woman, their mother had orgasms or not.
Right.
And for another thing was finally having orgasms by myself. And of course, it changed many, many things. And it's something that is changing. I think sexuality, who was I? Susan Sontag said, is highly, highly questionable. It's something that never stops. For example, years ago, women cannot have orgasms because, you know, women, pleasure and sexuality was almost forbidden. And now it's a kind of obligation. And no matter if you are gay or lesbian, whatever, if you don't have orgasm, the masculinity or whatever of the other, if it's an heterosexuality, it's in question. And the other one is, if you don't have orgasm, why you didn't have it? And why come? It's kind of an obligation right now. It's like a contract. If you have had no orgasm, something is very wrong. And it's not like that, no? So it's kind of like before it was forbidden and now it's an obligation. Come on, give me a break. I mean, if you talk with, you know, all these, you know, free love liberation women of the 60s, 70s, they are like, no, like the free love was not about that. And free sexuality was not about more baps, more, you know, more orgasm, more, and more stress for women especially.
Yeah, so that's so interesting. So this must produce a lot of conversations. There's the exhibition, and there's the you know, all the work you've done in this presentation, but I would imagine it also starts a lot of conversations, that especially in a show like this, men and women want to talk to you more about your work. I mean, you just did another interview today, but is that what you're finding, that there's also an interest among this in terms of it being a conversation and people wanting to know more? I mean, I know a woman who did a solo show about this, an American, a solo show about her difficulty of having an orgasm. And in America, in the United States, she's turned into a kind of sexuality coach, helping women to, maybe it sounds very American, but, you know, her show is sort of about questioning her solo one-woman show about, and she's a performer, about questioning her own sexuality and thinking something was wrong with her as she grew up to realizing that wasn't the case at all. So,
actually, I would say that for me, any project I've done, I don't know if I can say I finish it. I think that they are always open, because sometimes it's talking about orgasms in Mexico. The last one that I've done, it's about love in Serbia, you know, after the Balkan War and all this. I've done a project about the truth in Venezuela. You know, I like, you know, a big concept, a kind of big battleground, big lost battle, you know, destroyed. I love this kind of like, it's too big, it's too difficult, it's too wasted. Actually, I'm now developing a trilogy that I call it the trilogy of the trash concepts, that are love, truth, and work. And when I say trash, it seems that I'm saying this is shit. It's so wasted, we cannot use it anymore. No, we have to recycle. And we have recycling, it's something that it has to be done collectively, no? That it cannot be done individually. So for me, I love this kind of feeling that projects cannot finish, that doing the exhibition is an excuse of keep talking, and And this idea of this is open and it cannot be finished, I love it. Because if I work, I can be working about orgasm, love, truth, work, whatever, but if I should really say, what's your artistic work about, Mireia, is about something that I call the life, the lived life, the life who has been lived. Do you understand?
Yeah.
And I would love, but I would love to do a specific project to work with a team. I work a lot with collaborations also, to work with a team to try to make UNESCO, this international organization, to transform the life who has been lived in a universal heritage. How do you say in English? Patrimonio, like, you know, an archive of the life of everybody, that everybody who of this world who lived, you know, an archive of lives who have been lived. Because the life who has been lived means, what the hell is the lived life? No, if you would ask me, is whatever you or whoever have done with what life has given or has taken from you.
Mm.
Okay, because you are not what happens to you. It would be so unfair. You have been raped, you are a rape woman. No, I'm not a rape woman only. I'm what I'm doing after that. And you can do very different things. I've seen people who life has given to them many amazing things and they have done nothing. And people who life have given to them problems and have taken from them many things that they have done amazing things. No, I remember, for example, a woman in Mexico, this project. I remember a woman telling me, I thank God every day of my life for having been infected of a HIV virus. And I was like, wait a minute. And why? Because everything that happened after that, it has been positive in her life. One of the things is having orgasms. And you say, wait a minute, I need more information. Okay, and she explains to you, and you say, wow, yes, it's true. So imagine a woman that she wakes up one day in a hospital, I'm talking about 30 years ago. Okay, 35 years ago, when AIDS meant death, no? And then she asked, what's going on? And the nurse said, listen, you are infected by something called, HIV virus, and you're going to die. The woman had two kids, two daughters, and finally she finds out that it was her husband who infected her, because the guy was, you know, having sex with no protection, etc. And she says, the very first thing that happened after that, apart of that I didn't die, of course, is that my husband asked me to forgive him. And my husband was something that treated me so mean to me. That was so mean to me. The second thing is that he was so embarrassed that he left me. And I, all of a sudden, I was freed. I had no, you know, I had no energy to quit and that relationship, to ask for divorce. So it was amazing because HIV, you know, took him away, and it was fantastic because the guy, you know, went somewhere else, no?
Right.
And then she said, when problems with medication start, I started participating in demonstration with all these gay men that I've never met. And I think they are fantastic. They are asking me about my sexuality, and I realized that, yes, of course, they had, they were infected as me, but they had a lot of orgasms and a super happy sexual life, not like me. And then I started, touching myself, because they were kind of, they were asking and provoking and making jokes with me. And finally, one day with a teddy bear that she had at home, she had an orgasm. And all this, you know, doing demonstrations, participating for a better wall in a direct democracy, you know, screaming in the square, organizing, and talking free with her two daughters about the sickness, and even having orgasm, it has been possible thanks to HIV. That's her testimony. And then you say, yes, you are not what happened to you. You are what you do with that.
Amazing. So that's what an incredible,
that's an example.
Amazing story. That's an amazing story, and so glad you share that with me and the listeners. And there'll be links to your show here, if possible, in the interview. I want to ask you one more thing for this interview, which is just what you're reading now. I'm always curious what everyone's reading. What are you reading now?
I am reading for pleasure, because that's the problem, no? We are always kind of like reading because we have to read this. But I'm trying to read because I'm super busy right now with many things. But I'm trying to read Kill All Normies of Miss Neagle. It's no, Angela Neagle is her name. Do you know that book?
I don't know that book.
She's North American, and she's amazing. She's trying to, you know, to portray very well how come the old rights, white supremacism, all these, you know, people close to Donald Trump won the elections and won the war in internet. No, I mean, she's quite, she's very interesting in saying, do you remember when internet was the promise of the lefties, the hackers, and would be the way to really participate in politics in a very direct way, in a new way? And finally, it's full of trolls saying the political correct and the diplomacy is shit, the lefties, whatever, it's not funny, you know. And I'm, you know, I really want to finish that because I think that I'm like many other people else. We are trying to understand what's going on, because what's going on, it's not very nice. No, I just, the last project I did, I was in Serbia. And I part of the project, unexpected way, because, of course, if I'm trying to talk about the life who has been lived in my projects, it's because my projects are so lived, no? I'm living, that's the... And I was... So living, it's also being open to the unexpected things, the things that you have not theorized or conceptualized, etc. And I was collaborating with... refugees coming from Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq, that are stuck in Serbia out of the European Union border, and that they are kind of disobedient. They don't want to go to the official refugees camp because those places have been transforming to a business. And there are people, there are people who are like always profiting from the misery of others. And well, I like, you know, young voices like Angela Neagle analyzing, you know, let's really think what's going on here, no?
Yeah, I love that. That sounds like a very powerful book to read. Yeah. Medea, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I love what you're doing, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Brainerd. Thank you for your interest and your time, too. And, I mean, if you put Little Deaths and my name, you will find also the trailer of this video, and it's subtitled in English, so you can, the audience can follow the video and see it. What I was okay. talking 10 years ago with Mexican woman, and I'm sure they will be surprised, and it will happen something that I think is amazing. Normally when you see kind of documentary that I'm trying to denounce and you listen testimonies of people who have suffered, normally you feel sorry for them and you finish by saying, thanks God, it's not me, you know? But this documentary does something very different. You listen to them and it's so powerful, the way they narrate their own stories, that you don't feel sorry for them. You don't feel pity. They don't need anything from you, not even your sympathy. They are more offering, you know, their stories of life. And you end by saying, I want to be like them, which is not that, no, it's not that not that often we hear hard stories by saying, I want to be like them.
Right, right. Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you. Well, thank you again.
Thanks to you. Goodbye.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.